The World Cup has come to Kansas City, and so has the best podcast in baseball. Welcome to a brand new edition of the BPIB, where I drove west to cover the Cardinals against the Royals and see what direction the Cardinals are headed. Their offense is up. Their pitching is some up, some down. Their bullpen has gone sideways. I'm joined by editor Nathan Mills of the Post-Dispatch to discuss what way the Cardinals are headed next with the trade deadline there on the horizon. It's a brand new BPIB. Cue the music. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the best podcast in baseball. I'm muddling everything there, Nathan. Everybody, welcome to the best podcast in baseball.
We're gonna have to get you cue cards, I think. Yeah.
No kidding. I was like, I'm Closets by Design, and we're sponsored by Derek Gould. I would have just totally messed that up. So, anyway, take seven. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the best podcast in baseball. I'm baseball writer Derek Gould, joined this week by editor at the Post-Dispatch, Nathan Mills. You can listen to us on the video edition of the best podcast in baseball, and of course, right here on the best podcast in baseball, which is brought to you by Closets by Design. Nathan, welcome back. Good to see you. It's been
good to see you.
I had book week a little bit. I had a great chance to catch up with Bob Kendrick before coming to the Kansas City here. But I want to dive right into just tons of Cardinals talk in this edition of the best podcast in baseball. And I wonder what has your attention most. Is it the up arrow on the off, down arrows and check engine lights on the pitching? Which do you think is going to be the bigger tug on the Cardinals in the coming weeks?
You know, I don't know. Is the short answer to that question.
This has been a brand new episode of the best podcast.
Yeah, that's it. We'll see you next time. That's the end of the episode. The truth is, I don't know. I think the market is going to be so weird this year. I think with a possible work stoppage looming, and then the Cardinals, of course, are in a little bit of a weird position themselves, right? Where a lot of us expected this season to kind of not be very fun and not be very exciting and, not to have to worry about whether they should be buyers or sellers at the deadline, right? It was like, if you'd asked in March or April, early April rather, I think anybody would have said, yeah, they're going to be sellers. It's, we don't need to think about that. But, the thing I'm going to be watching most, and I'm most interested in is Dustin May and seeing what happens with him. He's going to be a great trade chip. I think he's been so good the past several weeks. The Cardinals have been clear. They're going to stick to the plan here. And you and I talked a little bit in the video edition on maybe how they could potentially get creative with some of these guys who, can help them win, but could also help them continue to build for the future, accumulate talent. And I think he's probably going to be the biggest, the linchpin and all that this season. So he's going to be the biggest thing that I'm going to be watching. But as far as, which direction the Cardinals as a whole get pulled, yeah, I think we got to wait for the market to shake out a little bit more.
Well, which direction do you believe is a true indicator? Are you buying into the improved offense since the overhaul of the lineup? Okay. What about it? I mean, part is Lars Nootbaar. There's no other way to.
Yeah. So Lars Nootbaar is a huge piece of it. Having Gorman in there, striking out at a, 35-40% clip is a big piece of that. So, mm-hmm. I don't know that the outburst they had there for a minute where they scored, 35 runs across four games or something like that. It was just an insane output. Mm-hmm. I don't buy that. No, but the improved offense. Yeah. I mean, when you've got more traffic on the bases, I mean, this is a thing that you've been writing about all season long, right? This is an offense that doesn't have the pop to go get 3-4 runs at a time, a couple of times a game. This is the kind of offense that's going to have to do its damage 90 feet at a time. When you add a guy like a Lars Nootbaar to that, who is very good at taking 90 feet at a time, and then you subtract somebody who is not getting 90 feet as often as they probably should because of some mm-hmm. other issues, yeah, that's a real tangible improvement. So yeah, I'm buying the offense being improved, though maybe not quite as improved as it looked at first.
Yeah, I mean, they took advantage of a rather compliant and hospitable Minnesota Twins pitching staff. It was interesting that the Cardinals, they absolutely got worked by the Kansas City Royals, right? In the first game of the series here in KC, and we're recording this the morning after the Cardinals lost by 14-6. But within that game, I mean, they did have 18 at-bats with runners in scoring position. They did have a season-high 15 runners left on base. I mean, they did a lot offensively to keep the pressure on. The game was basically decided by Matthew Liberatore's outing and the Cardinals' lack of kind of that breakout hit that capitalized right on a mistake, whereas the Royals got that. The Royals got not only one of those, but many of those. Matthew Liberatore was pretty candid in his assessment. He said the loss was on him. He said that they were just trading places at second base, which is true. He gave up 5 doubles in one inning. They were not fooled by much. I'm sure the Cardinals will go through and, you know, they were trying to figure out, was he telegraphing what was coming? Was he tipping his pitches, or was he just predictable with his pitches? Any of those things are on the table. They weren't convinced that he was tipping, but they're going to look back at it, which brings me to like the question, outside of Dustin May, Andre Pallante's pitched well, but the bullpen has struggled and was buffeted there in Minnesota. What direction do you think the pitching is going, and are you buying into it?
Well, I think that I think we're already starting to see the Cardinals make some moves similar to how they reshuffled the lineup, right? I mean, the lineup was partially a matter of timing, because, you know, we knew that Newt Barr wasn't going to start the season. We knew this was going to be about the time he was going to be back. So like that was sort of a planned, you know, I don't want to say planned reshuffle, right? Because there were other moves that were made there, but that one in particular was kind of a planned catalyst. They knew they were going to get back. Yep. The bullpen's a little bit different monster for a couple of reasons. One, because the bullpen had been in spurts pretty good and then has started to not so much. I think that, we saw him call Radjic. Is it Radjic? Is that how it's pronounced?
It's Radjic as in magic. So
Radjic, that's what I thought. Radjic.
If you can say Max Magic, you can say Max Radjic.
I thought it was like Raychick for a long time. And so like I'm trying to break myself of that now that I've seen you describe it as Radjic. Yeah.
Radjic as in magic. I for the longest time went, how could that guy not be left-handed? So I've had to remind myself that it's Radjic as in right-handed.
That's a good, okay, that might work for me. I'll try that. But I think you've already seen, you know, the beginning of some of the changes here and bringing him up. I mean, I think there are a couple of other guys in AAA at Memphis who are probably ready. And Blewett, former Kansas City Royal, Scott Blewett. You know, those guys are probably ready for an opportunity, and some of the guys who have maybe not done as well as maybe you would hope, maybe their runway is running out, to borrow a phrase from last season.
Yeah, an oldie but a goodie, right?
Yeah.
I mean, this probably a case to be made that this started with Dobbins, right? You know, the Cardinals saw a stretch of their schedule there where they were somewhat concerned or wanted to be proactive with rest for both the bullpen and then pivot to a 6-man rotation briefly. You have Dobbins being introduced twice out of the bullpen. Both times he takes over, you know, at least 3 innings of a game. One time he pitched more than half of the game, so that the bullpen did not. And then he made a start, and then he was back to Memphis. That was sort of the beginning of this. You know, it's been interesting because they've introduced along the way, you know, like Chris Roycroft into the mix. And it's like, okay, what was the thinking there? If you were just going to move on from him 72 hours later, right? But this is part of an unfolding plan that they describe, where they're getting guys into the mix and then introducing, you know, and then trying to find how they fit, grow their roles, and create spots then, or create spots then for the next kind of wave. So it is very, just as you said, it is very similar to the lineup, if you think of like Lars Nootbaar being the signal for the lineup overhaul, Hunter Dobbins was somewhat the signal for the bullpen overhaul. And now, I mean, I think it's real interesting to see which way they go. I think they're entering a real challenging and potentially turbulent time for their pitching staff. I think they asked a lot of their bullpen while they really protected their rotation. I think they asked a lot of their bullpen in April and May and have needed their bullpen to hold close leads in April and May and now June. I think that that's a lot of strain and on a bullpen, and it wouldn't be a surprise at all if they don't make the right moves if it snaps.
Yeah, I think that's fair, and I don't know if I'd go so far as to say snap at this point, but I think you've definitely started to see it bend right mm-hmm. over the past month from that early stress. But you know, the opposite of that on the other end, I think, is that you've seen the starting pitching starting to take a little bit larger share of some of that. We're starting to see guys pitch into the sixth more often. We're starting to see guys get a little bit into the seventh. May's complete game shutout is a little bit of an outlier, right? Because nobody's throwing complete games in 2026 anymore.
Yeah, but I wasn't aware that was allowed anymore. Like, why didn't the umpires step in? Somebody,
yeah, kept waiting. I think you have to get a waiver. Yeah,
Let me ask. Like, could the Padres have challenged that? Could they have gone to the headset and said, "Hey, we're not familiar with this. Is that still permitted?"
You know, I don't know if the Padres could have challenged that, but I can tell you from watching the game on the broadcast that the Padres had their challenges for quite some time, which was a topic of conversation for several innings on the broadcast. Yeah. So they could have. I mean, they had the challenges. Apparently, they had them just sitting there.
Dustin May had the best stuff going again at the best time against probably the best lineup for him to just work over. It was a confluence of events there. Pallante pitched well the next day. He was perfect mm-hmm. for a stretch and really was good. So good matchup for both of them that they took advantage of with the Padres that are just listless at times offensively.
Well, despite both some
really popular big names.
Yeah, well, and struggling big names. I know. I just traded for Fernando Tatis in my dynasty league, so I've clearly made a mistake. But I think that to your point, you know, both those guys pitching well on back-to-back days, you know, kind of goes back to what I was talking about. Like mm-hmm. both those guys have come along with quality starts regularly, you know, and not even just quality starts. They're going more than five innings, even if they're allowing four runs. And that's going to start alleviating, I think, some of that stress on the bullpen. Now, does that mean that stress is alleviated for the guys who are, you know, already overworked and struggling now? I don't know. You know, maybe those guys are replaced with fresher arms. Maybe a Ragic type latches on and he's able to work in a little bit lower pressure environment. But, I think that I hadn't really thought about it as kind of a scheduled reset, similar to Newt Bar, you know, the way you put it with Dobbins, but that makes all the sense in the world to me. I've kind of thought, you know, we talked a little bit about the trade deadline, you know, coming in here. And I have thought kind of the whole season that part of Dobbins' role this season is to be ready for when Dustin May gets traded at the deadline. Mm-hmm. I think that kind of, that makes sense that they would want to get him up, you know, if that is indeed the case, get him up and get some time in the, not just in the bullpen, but starting a game here and there.
Just so like they did with Michael McGreevy before, you know.
Exactly. Yeah, it feels like the exact kind of situation. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, after the deadline, Dobbins would be in the rotation full time. Just get a little bit of a spotlight before he actually steps into it full time.
Yeah. All right. So let's shift then to the direction they should head as the trade deadline goes. I want to offer up my big fat asterisk to this. Okay.
And boy, I did not say that. I did not think you were going to finish that with asterisk. Like when you said big fat, and then I thought that was going somewhere else. That's the way I talk in my private life.
That's the podcast. You know that's developing like a really strong tease for the next.
Okay.
Topic. Okay.
Right, so I like that.
Here it is. All right. The Cardinals have about 38 games remaining before the trade deadline in early August. They'll be headed toward the Bronx when it hits. They'll be part of a road trip that goes Toronto and New York, but they have 38 games-ish remaining before they have to make a decision, before that clock strikes. So thereabout. That is more than half of the games that they've already played. To put another way, they are only two-thirds of the way towards the deadline. So they have a lot of baseball left to play between now and then. We have a lot of days to fill with trade deadline angst, Nathan. I think people should pace themselves. I think they should. I think we all need to like just take a deep breath and realize that like the answers that we're all debating right now, the Cardinals don't have. Because as good as any team's algorithms are, even the Dodgers, they're not going to know where they are 38 games from now. They might have a projection. Right. They might have an idea. They certainly have a hope. They got plenty of hope. Every team has lots of hope. They have more hope.
Oh, not every
wins above replacement.
Not every team. Not
oh
every
my gosh,
team
every hope. Team has hope. Even the teams that have, even the teams that don't have any chance in the standings have hope that like the Boston Red Sox, you would go, man, they have no hope. But they sure hope that Roman Anthony is a player. Like they have hope.
Yeah. Okay. Every fair enough. I think I'm just jaded from like growing up as a Mets fan in the 2000s, like the team that just constantly shot itself in the foot, you know,
okay,
like,
I
never
corrected.
Had any hope.
I stand corrected. 29 teams have hope. The Mets have the Mets.
Yeah. Okay. See, that's okay. That is what I feel more comfortable with.
Yeah. You're right. Let me rephrase that. Okay. 29 other teams in the majors have hope. The there Mets have really good broadcasters.
I just wanted to make sure everybody, hey, that one I agree with.
Yeah. Okay. So, you know, kudos to the Mets broadcast team. But, you know, hey, I don't know, man. That team is weird.
Yeah. No, I'm with you.
Okay. Regardless, but the Cardinals still have a long way to go before they have to commit, and they still have a tough road ahead before they have to commit. And, you know, they do want to stay on the rails of their locomotive headed towards that rebuild, the accumulation of talent, the future view that they have, the idea that they're building a team for for perennial contention and to make noise in October, not just eke into October. You know, I talked with Chaim Bloom, and he used the phrase that the fans are, they know a sugar rush from something substantive. Sugar rush was his phrase. And so he was trying to, you know, draw a line between what this year could be, where they're playing great, they got a lot of excitement, but it might be the sugar rush compared to the substance that they want to create, you know, later. I get all that. And now they have time. So we probably all as a collective here, all of us as pundits and reporters and, you know, podcasters and talkers should go like take a deep breath and go, we're debating things that the Cardinals themselves don't even have answers to. That said, we can at least offer some context and some facts to what their decisions will consider. And that's where we get to Dustin May. Dustin May was signed to be traded. That deal is set up to be traded. Dustin May came here knowing that he was very intrigued by the plan the Cardinals had for him to get healthy, get well, stay healthy, and become the dominant pitcher that he once was. They all talked. They all met. Dusty Blake, pitching coach, was involved. He was really taken by both their track record last year of keeping starters healthy and also their plans for making the most of getting him back to what he used to be, both strength-wise, stuff-wise, and then performance-wise. And all of this was done under the understanding that it could be mutually advantageous. Meaning if he performs well, Cardinals could flip him for folks that will genuinely help them in the years to come. He can go play for a contender, become a free agent without the qualifying offer attached to him, and really strike it rich then as one of the youngest, still one of the youngest free agent starting pitchers available in the market. Now, the lockout does change that a little.
Right.
It really does. But you can understand why he would want to come here, maximize, be traded, shed that qualifying offer, get a chance to play in October, and on and on and on and on. All right, so that's where we can begin the conversation. Any offer that the Cardinals consider for Dustin May is going to have to surpass what they assign the value of that qualifying offer for.
Right.
So whatever they think that draft pick is worth, whatever player they kind of think that they're going to get, that's where the talk begins. What are you asking for, Nathan? If you're the Cardinals and you're considering teams interested in Dustin May, what are you aiming for? What are you looking for? Is that where maybe we see the dial twist a little bit for how soon the Cardinals think they can be in contention?
Well, hang on. When you say we'll see, is that where we see the dial flip is mm-hmm. that in what way? What do you mean?
Well, last year they traded Ryan.
Let me ask, like, it feels like you're at, like, a creative solution mm-hmm. or yeah. okay. Because the way you asked almost made me feel like you were asking if I thought they should hold on to him.
At the that can be an answer. Do you think they should?
No, I do not. Okay. Right. I mean, look, it depends on where they're at. If they win the next 38 games, you know, and like, yeah, of course, keep him. But like, realistically, no, I don't think that they should. I don't think they should keep him. In terms of what I'm asking for, I think this is where you've got to be careful, right? Because he's clearly going to be your top trade chip, you know, in terms of acquiring future talent. And you've also had an exciting enough season and you're in a good enough place in the standings that you have to be careful, you know, when you move him, if you move him, when you move him, to do it in a way that doesn't alienate your fan base. So you've got to do one of two things. You've either got to swing for like a big name prospect, you know, or more, right? Or you've got to swing it for like some sort of creative solution where he goes to a different team and coming back is a guy who's a little bit younger and has, you know, 3 or 4 years of control instead of potentially just the one extra year with the mutual option. So I think, yes, absolutely, you've got to move him. If it were me, if I were in High and Bloom's shoes, I would be looking for somebody who, you know, fits the window, fits what I'm looking to do in terms of how I'm looking to improve my team. Like, for example, the Cardinals need some power. If I could find a power hitter, you know, or even a potential power hitter, somebody who's maybe not figured it out yet, but I think we can unlock it. Somebody like that who's 24, 25 and has some MLB experience, but isn't, you know, hasn't broken out yet. That's probably what I would be looking for, is that type of player, the potential buy with already some MLB experience, but controllable.
How important is it that that person plays third base?
I don't think it's super important. I mean, I wouldn't go buy a shortstop that way. I wouldn't go buy a second baseman that way, and probably not a catcher, because we've already got 75 of those ready to go. So, but beyond that, I don't think it's super important. If it's third baseman, great. If it's a first baseman and Burleson has to DH every day, great. If it's a shortstop that we have to DH every day, I would do that too. I don't love it, you know, right? So but it's not important to me that it's third base. I think, in fact, you know, you probably have a better shot looking for an outfielder and then shuffling your guys a little bit, maybe having Nupar play a little more center or something like that and put a power bat in one of the corners. But I mean, that's a whole different can of worms to, you know, shuffle all that. So not super important to me that it's third base. If it is, great. If it's not, you know, as long as it's not putting out one of my hot young stars like a Wynn or a Weatherholt, I'd probably still go for it.
Well, where does Josh Baez fit in that hot young stars list?
I love Josh Baez. I think especially with his 4-homer game this week, you know, he is knocking on the door. He is making sure that he mm-hmm. is going to get at least an opportunity at AAA, if not a shot here in the majors. Maybe not this year, but soon. You know, I think that's a different question, right? Like, how deliberate are the Cardinals going to be with a guy like that? You know, they need a power bat. They have talked for multiple years now about needing a power outfield bat at the MLB level. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you know, just like we talked about with May, you know, Bloom has talked about staying the course, you know, and if staying the course with talent accumulation is the key, I've got to think staying the course with talent development is the key. And so he's probably still a little ways away, probably next year, if we have a next year, if not 2028 or, you know, whenever we get back to baseball, 2030, 2035, who knows?
I think you'll see Joshua Baez make his major league debut this year.
You think so?
Oh yeah. Yeah, definitely. Just because of the nature of the roster, right? He's already on the 40 man. There, mm-hmm. You know, you could bring him up towards the end of the year and not lose an option year. You don't have to option him out. You just keep him till the end of the year, and there he is. So there's no concern there. If there is a lockout, he won't be able to play because he's on the 40 man. There's no way to get him off of that. So he's represented mm-hmm. by the union under the Major League Baseball CBA. So he will be locked out just like everybody else on the 40-man roster. And I don't know if they want to delay his look at the majors until sometime next year, when at the, you know, at the worst, which seems like a weird way to use that, but it's true. At the worst, he could get what Mason Wynn got, which was that cameo appearance for the final month, final 5 weeks of the season, and still have, you know, then they'd closely monitor his rookie status. They would not go over that. It would be exactly under that rookie status, so they don't get the draft pick if they want to go that route. There's also a world where they trade so many folks that he's the starting left fielder when they all come out of that, and he –
yeah, I can see that.
Pinstripes in the Bronx, but he's set to debut this year. I mean, I talked to an official with the team who said it's inevitable. He's on his way. It's a matter of playing time and readiness and all that stuff.
He's kicking the door down in Double A. So I mean,
yeah, and he already has the biggest hurdle he cleared for a player like him, and that's that he's on the 40-man roster. Which is puts him ahead of so many others. How deep do you think the Cardinals ought to go with their trades? How far into the roster should they go? You got a guy who's a pending
free agent. As far as it takes.
So Riley O'Brien, that deep?
Yeah. I know it's hard being a fan and watching a team, especially a team like this. It's so exciting and so fun. And you know, the style of baseball they play is it's not just fun, it's engaging, right? Like it's not just you have fun when you watch a game, it makes you want to watch another one. You know, I mean, it's that kind of team, I think. And so I understand that it would be hard after having, you know, 90 games of that to maybe take a step back. But I think, you know, when you're a franchise like St. Louis and you have the history that you have, you're not just building for 2026, right? And, you know, is this a team that you could supplement and get to the playoffs? Yeah, probably. I would not have said that in April, you know. I wouldn't have said that on April 1, you know. But they are scrappy and they fight and claw and they take their runs 90 feet at a time and they do it. They do exactly what they said they were going to do. And it's that to me has been the most impressive thing about this season, because you hear teams talk about, you know, a more simplified approach and just, you know, it feels like coach speak, but in this particular case, it seems to be working. So I think you have to be careful, you know, selling everybody, but I think the reality is that you're not building for 26, you're building for 28, 29, 30, you know, whatever you think the window is going to reopen again, you're building for that year on, right? And so that means that you are in the talent accumulation business. You know, we look at what the Dodgers have done, and for all the, you know, deserved trash talk that the Dodgers get about spending a bunch of money, the fact of the matter is the Dodgers are acquiring and developing their own stars too. Mm-hmm. You know, they haven't just built a winner by buying stars like the Mets have tried to do. They have built a winner by procuring and developing a farm system that's one of, if not the best in baseball. That's the business the Cardinals are trying to get back into. And so I think that, you know, if that's what you want to do, if that's actually your goal, then you stick to it, you stick with it. And I think, you know, you and I have talked before and even on this particular podcast about, you know, fans knowing the difference between a sugar rush, right, to use Bloom's phrasing, and the real thing. And even though I think there is some real, you know, to use the real thing, right, again, as the phrase, the real thing is underneath a lot of this, but I think there's still a sugar rush here going on, and I think you have to stick to it.
Well, even if even if the fans buy into the sugar rush, Nathan, and they start, I mean, they literally buy in, they start buying tickets and they buy tickets for the future. What kind of cap tip / nod of respect / you know, I guess contract do the Cardinals enter into with that kind of support? I mean, is not a playoff push something that fans are buying into and expect, or do you think the fans are buying in eyes wide open to the notion that come August, they might be seeing preparation for 2027, 2028? Like where does the reward for the fans who do choose to support this team, where should that be considered, if at all?
I think, you know, listen, from a business perspective, I don't know if it should be considered at all, right? If your plan is to build long term and try to, you know, because look, the reality is, you know, you're talking about fans buying tickets in 2026, but your goal isn't just to sell tickets in 2026. It's to sell them in 27, 28, 29, and so on and so forth. So, you know, if you sell some pieces with the idea of trying to, I don't want to say limp into October, but just get to October without, you know, without the intent of winning a World Series. Like as fun as this team is, like they're not, they don't feel like a World Series team, even with some pretty serious supplements, not without driving away, sending away the capital, you know, the kind of prospect capital that it would take, you know, to acquire the kind of pieces to make them that kind of team. Right.
Yeah.
So, you know, this is a team that right now, even as good as they've been, as exciting as they've been, are not even leading their own division, you know? So, I mean, I think that we have to keep some perspective. Yes, this is exciting. This is fun, especially after the past couple of years. Right. Mm-hmm. But the fact of the matter is this team is still not leading its own division as good as it's been. And so, you know, if you want to, if your goal is to win a World Series, you know, maybe you should be contending for your division first before you go out and buy a bunch of pieces. So my thought on that is that, you know, things could change in the next 38 games. You know, you've talked about how far away we are from the actual deadline itself. Things could change by the time we get there. But as it stands right now, I wouldn't sell everything that's not nailed down. Right. But anything that you think you can get better with, I would sell it. Yeah. And would that's said, what, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, I would, it wouldn't necessarily be prospect capital, you know, that you're acquiring with these trades. Some of these, like I talked about with May, you know, maybe it's getting a young MLB guy who you can plug in, and it's, you know, it doesn't, I feel like it doesn't have to be, okay, here's the trade deadline. We're exciting. We're competitive. We're, you know, we're having a good time, and then we sell everybody. And all of a sudden there's a double A team on the field. I don't think that's the case. I think there are MLB players out there that you can still put together a young, exciting team that's going to be competitive in the second half, you know, and not just, you know, lose 60 games the rest of the way. And you can do that with the pieces that you have. Now, how the market shakes out, are those guys available? I don't know. I mean, you know, the reality is that the market may not shake out in a way that those guys are available, that the options aren't there. And maybe you hold on to some of these pieces, you know, maybe you don't need to trade a Riley O'Brien because you don't get enough of an offer for him. But yeah, if you get something that you think you can make you better, I would trade everything that you can. That's, you know, reasonable.
I think it would be fair if the Cardinals dial up their asking price on some of these guys.
I agree.
If that's one of the more creative directions that they could go, it's a subtle one, but you could really ask for a lot for Riley O'Brien, because the alternative is you keep him around and you see what happens. Right. Mm-hmm. And so they bake that in to the notion of what they're offering is this, the idea that, well, you know what, keep him and see what happens. And for each guy, whether it's, you know, Jojo Romero or Dustin May or guys with years of control like O'Brien or a free agent to be like Ryan Stanek, you bake that into the notion of like, okay, we want this asking price, but if no one meets it, then that's fine with us. We don't need to move these guys in the sense like they needed to move guys last year or a couple of years ago. They needed to move guys last year because they risked not getting anything from them, and they also were going nowhere in the standings. This year, they risk not getting anything for them, for some of them, right? But they may be going somewhere in the standings. So that has to be part of the factor. And maybe that allows for them to ask for the higher price, shoot for the moon a little bit because they're okay with the alternative.
Well, I think too, some of these guys may play themselves into a position where they force the Cardinals to ask for a lot more for them. I mean, listen, I don't want to act like Dustin May is going to be Scooble at the deadline, right? But like the way he's pitching right now, the way his contract is set up, his age, everything else, he could be a legitimate top end trade piece at this deadline and could command a legitimate top end return. You know, I mean, so I don't, yes, absolutely. I think the Cardinals should up their asking price. You know, I mean, you don't want to get ridiculous, but like you should be asking for more than what you reasonably think you can get. And if you get that, trade, everybody, trade them. Every, you know, I mean, like I said, not Weatherholt, not Wynn, not your young stars that are clearly part of your future window, but anybody who's not, send them out. That said, you know, if you don't get that asking price, you know, if your ask is not met, then keep playing the way you're playing. You know, at, I feel like the Cardinals don't have a whole lot to lose given the setup other than some place, you know, their place in the standings. And considering that their place in the standings is not at the top of them in any, you know, measure whatsoever, I don't think that, you know, that just, that shouldn't be a huge priority in terms of like, what do we have to lose? Oh, place in the standings. I don't think it's that important. You know, what do we have to lose in terms of goodwill? That's probably something worth considering, like you, like you suggested. But I think that's the matter of raising that price a little bit. You can, I think fans are smart enough, and especially St. Louis fans are smart enough that if you say, look, we understand you loved this guy, but the guys we got back, you know, fit the window. We might be able to do something more with those guys. I think fans will buy that if you actually do it and you give it to them straight. You know, if you go out and you sell those guys for nothing, then they're not going to buy that.
So it would be entirely fair if the Cardinals heard, or if, I'm sorry, if the fans heard that from the Cardinals and the fans said, cool, we'll buy tickets then.
Like, I think that's probably the reaction you would get.
I think that would be a fair response. You want to tell us about this team you're building for 2028? See you then.
I think that's a fair response from fans. And I'll tell you, if I were operating the team, I would say, okay, we'll see you then. You know, I mean, it's that simple. Like I said, you're not trying to sell tickets in 26. You're trying, I mean, you are, right? Obviously.
I mean, they
like,
desperately need to.
Yeah. They need to. Yeah. You're trying to sell tickets in 26, but when you're building these teams for the future, you're not just trying to sell tickets in 26. You're trying to sell them in 27, 28, 29, right. You know, and the reality is, I don't want to say the reality is, but the likelihood is Dustin May's not going to be here in 28, you know? I mean, so what, you know, you're not going to buy tickets to see him in 28. So
I mean, the way this is going, that year's model of Dustin May will be a Cardinal. That's sort of how this.
Well, okay. That's probably,
but not Dustin May,
not him himself. Right. Yeah. That's probably fair, but you're not going to come, you're not going to pay to see him in 2028. So like I knew that anyway. So come pay to see the guys I just get in 2028. I can live with that.
Here's a little subplot to all this. And you know, we can timestamp this and remember when I said it. Dustin May continues this a little bit and he'll be an all-star.
Oh, yeah. I don't think there's any question about that. I mean,
he continues on this track. He'll be in Philadelphia representing the Cardinals, which would be, you know, probably the best case scenario for everybody involved, and a nice little like kind of nod and bonus to all the work he's put in and the plan the Cardinals had in place. He'll be there in Philadelphia with Jordan Walker and Ollie Marmol and perhaps a few others, you know.
Well, and that's I think that's one of the things to kind of take away from this season, for Cardinals fans, right? It's like maybe this season doesn't end with a deep playoff run, and certainly doesn't feel like it's going to end with a World Series win, right? But you went from a team that had one all-star, right? Like the required one all-star, you know, to potentially a team that could have, well, if you include your coach, right, three or four all-stars. So like there is clear, and it's not just in the standings, there's clear marked progress that you can see this team making on the field in terms of the perception around them. You know, there are going to be more awards, there are going to be more honors because you're starting to see these guys come around. So, you know, I think that's kind of the way it needs to be looked at, you know, is that like, this isn't, even if the deadline ends up, you know, you mentioned earlier, you know, selling all the outfielders and that's how Baez gets his shot to come up. You know, it doesn't necessarily have to be a huge sell-off like that. Right. Although if it does, you know, you figure it out. But I think that if it is, you go, look, we've still had this progress. We've still shown, you know, what we can do here in terms of development. We've shown what our future can look like. You know, if we keep on this path, this is the next step down that path is this trade, bringing in this next set of guys, this next wave of talent, you know, can you take this ride with us? And I think that's the ultimate question, is not, you know, will fans keep buying tickets in the second half of the season. It's not, you know, will fans come back on in 2028? It's will you take this ride with us? You know, it's not a matter of, you know, one season here or there. This is a ride that everybody has to take together, and the Cardinals are already on it. Fans can get on the ride or not. I think more of them, you know, you look at ticket sales this year. I think they're buying into this team. I think they're buying into the change that is happening, you know, in terms of culture, in terms of, you know, how the team is built and constructed. And I think that will continue. Certainly there will be some fans that, yes, when you have some sales here at the deadline that won't come back. But, I think that, again, this is a long-term project. This is a long ride that everybody's going to come in on. I don't think that I think that you have to consider goodwill, but at the end of the day, you don't make decisions based on it, if that makes sense.
Sure, it does. May I tell you a story that becomes a parable that might be definitely applicable to this situation?
Sure.
And shows the other side of it. You know, I'm here in Kansas City covering the car. You know, the Royals have a young superstar signed long-term. He is the cornerstone of everything they want to be for a long time. And, you know, they know that the sun is setting on Salvador Perez's career, a remarkable number that happened in that game. The first game of the series for the Cardinals was that Perez took over the lead for career homers at Kauffman Stadium, surpassing George Brett. George Brett was in the crowd because Perez is a few swings away from overtaking him for the franchise lead in home runs. Salvador Perez has his World Series trophy. He has his two pennants. He's fading towards the end of his career. And the Royals had hoped to take the rising peak of Bobby Witt and the closing window of Salvador Perez and outfit that roster with contention. They've made moves for that, right?
Yeah.
And there I am watching and covering the first game of this series, and Bobby Witt Jr., again, one of the best all-around players in the game, would have an MVP if it weren't for the existence of Aaron Judge. You know, he hits a home run because of course he does. And then in the fourth inning, he'll also commit an error, but there in the fourth inning, he gets hurt. He tries to stay in the game. He injures his knee. He comes out, and here's where this story bends into a parable. As of taping this, or as we're recording this, it's not clear the damage. It's not clear the extent of the injury. There was some, you know, follow-up exams that were going to happen. They'll know more as they get ready for that second game. They'll likely know more by the time the Cardinals leave town than they know now. But there was enough concern, obviously, with him moving around and how he felt, you know, with a knee injury that it's like he was out of the game. And that is, in that moment, you think about how fragile contention is. If the Cardinals are saying, okay, we're going to build a team, we're going to create a core, and we're going to augment that core when it's ready to go, can you be certain that this is how well Alec Burleson will be playing at this time? Can you be certain that this is how well Jordan Walker will be playing at that time? You know, there's every indication that they are on the upswing, no pun intended, but an injury and it comes undone and you can't bank on it. You can't go like, all right, well, we got to prepare for an injury. That's not the way to do it. Instead, I'm suggesting, like, do you have to treasure contention when you have it? Because contention can be as fleeting as the health of the knee of the prime superstar cornerstone shortstop. And not much has gone right for the Royals this year. They are not the team they wanted to be. They are not getting the performances that they expected. They didn't get the pitching that they wanted. It hasn't come together like they hoped. On the other side, it's all come together far better than the Cardinals could have thought it would. They're getting great performance. They are finding offense. They are playing a crisp game. And I wonder how careful they need to be to cherish contention and understand that it's not as predictable as they may want it to be. Their year to contend may not be 2028. It may not be 2029. the best they ever get from this core? Maybe right now.
Don't even put that in the ether, man. There are fans listening to this right now that are like,
I mean, but am I wrong?
Why would you say that? No, but I mean, I think am I wrong? Like realistically, I mean, realistically, that's possible. But I'm just saying like, oh, people, you probably sent some shivers down people's spines. Good. When you said that.
Good. Because I mean, it's something to think about, right? Like cherish contention.
Yeah.
Don't act. Yeah. I mean, like it, contention is fragile and fleeting. And, you know, especially if you're a small market team that isn't going to pay to overcome its fragileness by buying the best duct tape in baseball and wrapping it around your roster every year. The Cardinals aren't going to be that. They're not going to spend on the best duct tape to you know, fix the fractures in their roster. They're going to rely on depth and homegrown stuff, and they're going to count on the fact that they'll have insurance and they'll be able to replace that. But goodness, man, Bobby Witt hurts his knee, and that's a different team, and that's a different trajectory. Mm-hmm. And the 1 year you had everybody going right looks a lot different when you go, well, this isn't the year we have them going right enough. I mean, okay, but you may not have them ever go this right again, right?
Yeah.
It's the bird in hand versus two birds on a bat. There's a bird in hand right now.
That was really good wordplay.
Two birds on a bat. Thanks.
I like that. That's I like that. Something tells me you've used that one before. That just feels like one you've had in your pocket for a minute.
No, just came up with it on the spot here.
That's good. That's better than my end of the best podcast in baseball video edition earlier. That was nice. I like that.
I do the wordplay professionally, Nathan.
I know you're a pro. I'll tell you, you know, I think that just speaks more. Your example speaks more to what at least the stated goals of this Cardinals rebuild are, right? Is to build out that infrastructure. And I don't just mean like in the technology and stuff we've seen this year. I mean, the type of development infrastructure so that when you're acquiring these draft picks, like they've been doing, that you actually turn them into usable pieces. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, there are a lot of teams that have a lot of talent and it doesn't pan out. You know, they don't bring guys to the majors who take off and become MVP talents, or they do and they, you know, and then they get hurt. It's kind of a curse, right? The Cardinals, I think, are trying to build a sort of a more of a long-term vision. You know, I've said a few times while we've talked that, you know, it's not necessarily about 26, it's about 27, 28, 29, and so forth. I think when you have the type of system that produces more consistent talent, and it doesn't have to be top-end talent, just consistent, you know, usable MLB talent, mm-hmm. then I think you minimize some of that risk. I mean, the fact of the matter is anytime you lose a superstar, nobody's immune to that. Nobody's going to be unhurt by that, pun intended. But, you know, I think that if you've got enough, you know, reserves in the tank, you've got enough of your system back built, it's next guy up sort of mentality. And I think that's what the Cardinals are trying to build. And at the end of the day, if that's your goal, then and Bloom said it, you know, you've got to do it. You can't lose focus on what the end goal is just because you've got this shiny season in front of you this year. Yeah. And I think that, you know, it's not necessarily injuries, you know, it can be, it's a lot of times, but to your point, you know, can you guarantee that Jordan Walker plays like an MVP in the second half? You can't, you know,
not even second half, but 28.
29. Sure. Right. But that's what I'm talking about just for this year. You know, if the conversation is, should we hold this guy because we might contend this year, or trade him because we can get some pieces, you know, for 28, like,
yeah,
you know, there's no guarantee that any of this that has happened in the first 60 some odd games continues for the next 100 some odd games.
No, that's fair.
But you know, I think it just speaks to the goal the fragility of contention, to your point, speaks to the Cardinals' goal of building that long-term contender, the deeper system.
Yeah, no, I think you're exactly right, and I mean I think the Baltimore Orioles had the same thing in mind.
That's true.
I think the Chicago Cubs had the same thing in mind. They won a World Series. I think Cleveland has.
I will say
thing in mind. I think that, you know, all these teams have the same thing in mind. And what happens is they get on the hamster wheel of always building towards a team that never arrives.
Yeah. You
know, they're building for depth, and they're building for, and they load up on talent. I mean, you could argue that the Brewers are this way, and we'll see if the Brewers trade, but the Brewers are like, man, they build teams, they contend, they get to the postseason, and they're like, we're not building for the team that just gets in. We're building for the team that makes noise, but they don't add to that team. They don't say, you know what? We have a spark. Let's turn it into a blowtorch. And, you know, that spark will eventually dim, and they'll look back and go, man, what did we do with it? And what happens is these teams get on this hamster wheel or treadmill of always chasing the depth and the farm system and the homegrown team that can never be disproven that it's not out there. And they sometimes, you know, I mean, it's the same kind of thing that we talk with. Sometimes you miss what's right in front of your face, you know, and they miss the team that's right in front of their face.
Yeah. I think those franchises you mentioned specifically have some other challenges that I don't know that St. Louis has. Like Cleveland specifically is constantly building toward a club that never arrives because they never spend the money to supplement the team. You know, I think St. Louis wants that. At least they've said, right? The ownership has said that. Yeah, we'll see. I mean, who knows? But ownership has said that once the team is there, that they're willing to supplement, you know, and bring in spend some money to bring in some stars. If Cleveland did that, I think Cleveland would be in serious contention more often than they actually are. Baltimore's just different. Different monster altogether. But yeah, I think that's a fair enough point. And you know, if I were the Cardinals, I would certainly be wary of that. You've got to know when to pull the trigger. And you know, I don't 26 doesn't seem like it. Just pay, you know, and but you know, that's why I get paid to sit here in a recliner and talk baseball with you instead of work in baseball. You know,
I just think that this forthcoming stretch is a real challenge for the Cardinals. They stand, and it could be the validation of what they have said all along, you know, the sugar rush, right? Like this might be reality coming into play, but let's not ignore the previous 9 games they just played and the lessons of those teams too. Minnesota Twins have Byron Buxton, one of the best all-around players in the game, a ferocious hitter. They have had their revenue slashed. They were up for sale, all of that stuff. That team missed its window to capture the spark of Buxton and the lineup around him. I mean, look at the pitching talent they had, you know, and Pablo Lopez, you know, is injured, gone, depth, you know, what are they going to do? And they had Sonny Gray at peak Sonny Gray, and they just didn't capitalize. They were building towards something else, and they didn't capitalize. Then you have the San Diego Padres, who are wild when it comes to trading and collecting talent. They've invested a whole lot of money in it, and they did get sold, and they did reap a windfall of billions for being sold. And how many World Series rings do they have for all of this? You know, I mean, they were chasing billions, they're chasing franchise value, fine, but they also collected some really high talent guys thinking this is what's going to put them over, and it didn't. Then you play the Royals and you see their shortstop limp off. I just think there are lessons here about the fleeting nature of contention that you don't have to agree with. You don't have to like subscribe to, and you probably shouldn't break from any sort of discipline to chase, but at least be aware of them. Like these are three teams that were all, I mean, they all had it going. They all had the glint in the eye of a contender, and then they got a thumb in it.
I mean, you go back to like 2022, the Cardinals had a glint in their eye, right, of a contender.
Mm-hmm. And then they had
a thumb in it. Yeah, two thumbs. Maybe.
Yeah, the closer got a stiff finger and things went awry. So that's a great, great example. You know, you're one injury away from, you know, having a different outcome for that 2022 season, all because of a jammed finger in Pittsburgh and a game after they had already clinched. Go figure.
That's what it's, you know, I think that it's funny though. We've had this conversation. We've been sitting here. We've been talking for an hour about the trade deadline and will they, won't they, should they, shouldn't they? Yeah. And it's so funny because I feel like some things you've said, I feel like you're all in on selling everybody, build for the future. And then other things you've said, I feel like you're like, nah, let's make a run. Let's see what happens. So it's like, I can't tell if you're playing both sides. I don't know if you're just looking at all the possibilities or
I'm being just, a beat writer.
Don't don't have a dog in the fight. You know, that's what I'm saying. Like it's kind of
being honest, a beat writer.
Yeah. Well, it's throwing me for a loop. Honestly, it's because like you keep asking me what I think, but I can't get a read on what you think. You know,
that's my job.
I like that. That's pretty good.
That's what a beat writer does, right? Looks at all the angles, looks at the scope, challenges with questions. You know.
Yeah, but we're in a podcast.
No one's asking my opinion. Man. Yeah, but I mean, my name doesn't change. My role at the paper doesn't change. I still gotta like.
But I mean, like you know, we're just talking. You know.
Yeah, I know, but
yeah, well, sure. I mean, like, I'm not asking you to break any rules. I'm just saying, like, you know,
I don't get to go on a podcast and all of a sudden talk like Benjamin Hockman and Lynn Worthy. I'm not a columnist.
Oh, if you acted like Hockman on a podcast, I would listen to that podcast so fast. You and Hockman switching personalities for a day would be just the most fun thing for me I could possibly imagine.
Yeah, I could see that.
I know readers don't understand that, but if they've ever watched a 10 Hockman or a BPIB video edition, I feel like you'll understand.
Yeah.
These two folks could not be any different in terms of personality.
No, I mean, I'll put it this way. Benjamin Hockman is tarps off and I am buttoned up.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that's... You've had that one in your pocket too, right?
Nope. All this is off the cuff, man.
This is good. You should do like stand-up comedy or something. Do improv or something. No, you know?
I'm plenty busy trying to come up with one-liners on deadline.
Yeah. Okay. I see what it is. You did have that in your pocket. You just been holding on to it. That's the one-liner. Deadline one-liner. It's a deadline one-line is what it is. That's what we should start calling those.
No.
DG's no. Deadline one-lines.
You'll be very disappointed. They're probably one.
You could trademark it.
60 days. No, I don't think so. I don't I don't think so. I don't think there's a high demand for those right now.
Yeah, nobody's gonna come by and hey, you got a one-liner for the end of this story I'm writing?
Yeah. I don't think I can monetize that skill. Let's say that.
I think you should go on Shark Tank and try to pitch it.
Okay. I will come in as the closer for your tweet. That's my role. I will come in for the closer, you know, and I'll do it. Yeah.
You get an entrance and stuff like Ryan Helsley, you know, it's like,
instead of
gold, it's something gold. It's like all gold lights and stuff. And maybe some glitter falls down and you come out with a phone and
none of that interests me. No,
you don't like the glitter. Okay. Well, fine.
I don't like the showiness. Idea. I don't like the pressure.
You're buttoned up. You're not tarps off.
That's true. I am not tarps off. I'm head down, to quote the manager. I'm head down.
I'm
forward thinking.
I'm tarps off too, just not on a podcast. That's all.
That is Nathan Mills. Thank goodness. This is not video. All right, keep your shirt on, Nathan. That's sports editor and also digital editor, everything editor, night editor. You got a lot of editor titles there, Nathan Mills.
I edit pretty much anything they ask me to edit. Yeah.
Correct. That's the way it works. He's the universal editor at the Post Dispatch and SCLtoday.com. And recurring guest and contributor here at the best podcast in baseball. You can find all of the Constant Cardinals coverage, including the video that he mentioned, the columns from the columnists that we mentioned, a really good story from our Hummel intern, Amber Winkler, on Joshua Baez's tribute to his late father, hitting 4 home runs on the 3-year anniversary of his father's death and the emotions that were going through him. And also the strength he found really early on in that game by turning to his father and looking to him somewhat for guidance. Yeah. Really strong
stuff. I read that story last night. So good. Strong Amber did stuff. A great job.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's there at stltoday.com. You can find the best podcast in baseball wherever you get your podcasts. That includes stltoday.com. It also includes iTunes and Spotify. Please rate and review the podcast so we know what we're doing well and we know what we're doing better. Nathan, thank you so much for joining me. It's been a pleasure. We'll have to pick this back up again sometime when you put your shirt on.
I will be tarps off for every podcast from now on, just so you know. Tarps off section is in my office.
All right, listeners have been warned. This is the best podcast in baseball, brought to you by Closet by Design of St. Louis. I'm St. Louis Post-Dispatch baseball writer Derek Gould. Talk to you soon.
We have the tech to get food delivered in 15 minutes, but we all have horror stories about buying tickets. The Game Time app gives fans the advantage. Get amazing tickets in just a few taps. Fees are included, so what you see is what you pay. And the Game Time guarantee means authentic tickets at the best price every time. Take the guesswork out of buying tickets to concerts, sports, comedy, and more with Game Time. Download the Game Time app and create an account for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply.